On the magnets on a Tuesday, Justin Lepich, hello.
Good morning, Jared.
Did you live the fortunes of those teams yesterday?
Yeah, I was watching the Opals last night. Oh my gosh, that was just heart pounding, wasn't it? Really, it's weird watching a game where it's not about winning; it's about how much you win by. It's just a completely different feel, and it'd be a different feel for the opposition because obviously they know they're going to lose the game with the 5 minutes to go. So realistically, their goals are just to annoy you, which is actually quite an odd situation to be in. Some people might have been in that before where the only thing you can achieve out of the game is kicking the opposition out of the finals if they get so many points. Like, that's really what the game was for the opposition.
There was a game where Brendan Favola was going for his 100th goal, is my memory, and the whole setup was to thwart him getting there.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
Yeah.
Just remind me who that just alludes to.
It was at Etihad Stadium. Yep. I remember the game now. I'm trying to think who it was.
0433 98 11 16 is, you'll know. And the whole last quarter was about stopping him scoring goals, which really didn't make any sense in anything other than to be
annoying.
A narc.
Exactly. And sometimes we do that. It's the Australian way, isn't it?
Before we get to the magnets, the Jack Viney incident. So serious misconduct. It's a category and not often used. So I just tried to put a bit of context around it last night. This is the Sicily stomping on the calf. This is Stratton pinching, so both won game. This is a green on Bontempelli in the elimination final, $7,500. So the garden variety, $2,000 to $3,000 fine doesn't cut it. And as much as anything, there's the demand is, come and explain what you were doing, because this is no good.
Yeah, and explain it, but how long were you doing it for? It just seemed like it went on forever. It didn't really just the holding down of the neck. So, yeah, it was a really odd thing to do. I mean, obviously we play a really highly combative sport, so contact's going to happen and sometimes a bit of over-the-top contact's going to happen, but that's a really defenseless player on the ground. So whenever we see a defenseless player, it's kind of no need. He's going to, well, what's the need to fight back for someone who's relatively defenseless on the ground? So it'll be interesting to see what he says to that.
Heavy fine, 1 week, 2 weeks. What's your gut feeling on it?
It almost held too long, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you want to get it out of the game. So, you know what? I always hate, I know you probably like the tribunal more than me commenting on it, but I'd never know from year to year and decade to decade what's going to happen. What happened 20 years ago when I played, some things in that era actually are more stricter than they are today, and other things are actually softer than what they were back then. It's changed from both ends of the spectrum. So it's somewhere in that fine to a week, isn't it? I don't think it's any more than that, though.
Yeah, my gut feeling from what I could understand yesterday was they'll go in and ask for a week suspension and they'll get it.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see whether Jack Viney attempts to defend it or whether he just reads the play and Melbourne go, no, we're going down here. So minimum fuss and just make sure we don't antagonise. So round 22, 2008. Carlton and Hawthorn just pouring through, and Buddy got his 100, and Clarkson flooded the back line to make sure Favola couldn't get it.
Yeah, Clarko. That's a beauty, isn't it? Oh, again, I don't remember the scores of that game. But
well, Hawthorn won by 78 points.
So they won by 78 and tried to stop Fee from kicking his 100. Oh, that's unfair,
isn't it? Is
that
a bit mean?
That's a bit mean.
I think that's mean. I'll collect a few of those messages and share the recollections as we go. While we're talking Hawthorn, so the 72 hours that they live, spectacularly public, angst-ridden, and obviously the players are absolutely involved in all of this. It plays out, they go to Tassie, and for three quarters they thrash the Lions.
Yep.
The emotions in footy and the way that it is played above the shoulders is exhibit A to the jury there.
Yeah. One thing about our game, it keeps changing trends and keeps changing, you know, what happens in the game. God, more than ever, this game is becoming, at the moment, an effort-based competition, you know, which kind of shows the better you are and the more energy you have on a particular day, your styling tends to overcome the opposition. And I think in a year where everyone's a little unsure, you can't plan a week out where you're going to be and all those sorts of things. Maybe it is a little bit of potluck one day, which team has the most energy compared to the opposition, because, you know, we're seeing a lot of upsets from bottom teams to top teams and vice versa. So it is a funny year like that. So you can never predict anything. I wouldn't be going into, like, North Melbourne's a top eight team for me at this point in time. I wouldn't be wanting to play them because they're just flying.
And so the coaching challenge in moderating emotions, I think is really interesting. And so players aren't metronomes. And no matter how much you want that to be the case. So West Coast, 300th game for Shannon Hearn. It should be an emotional lift and it becomes a collapse. Hawthorn lived through. All there is for Hawthorn, the players on Sunday, is to go out and represent that jumper after the turmoil, self-inflicted turmoil of the previous 3 weeks. Trying to read it, trying to harness it, trying to coach it. Gosh, and that's not in any textbook, I don't think.
Yeah, well, I mean, the psychology of the game, and Emma Murray's out there, and I saw her there, so she's probably the best person to ask in this space. But one thing I know, anything that you put a price on or you put an outcome that's other than the fact of what you want to achieve, so it's somebody's 300th game or it's a grand final day or it's anything that could add exterior to just do your job, because ultimately you just have to do your job. So all West Coast had to do for Shannon Hearn is do that role to the best there. They didn't have to try any harder. They just had to do that to the best of their ability and they didn't get the job done. And as Adam Simpson said after the game, so often they can be distractions, those things. If you what the public say, do it for Shannon Hearn. You know, I think that makes it worse if you talk about that before the game often. It's just like, no, do your role, do your best. You do yours. We stack it all up. We win. Then we have actually done the best thing for Shannon Hearn. So that to me is the way it should go. Often it's probably not how they think it should happen in local footy. Normally it's like, oh, Mac is 300th. We've got to get there and do it for him. But often that provides a distraction.
And the Brisbane Lions, I didn't think Chris Fagan didn't make any effort to disguise the concerns that they have within their game with us on 360 last night. And he pondered the toll of the season, that slow start, 10 out of 11 through the middle stages. Are they paying for that now? What are they trying to rectify within their game? Having fallen, he acknowledged they're not making the top four. So how do you position yourself, home elimination final, see if you've still got a role to play? Is when you study the Lions, what are you seeing?
Well, they've had the upsets for a top, what do you want to call it? Anyone in the top four, you can't probably lose to the bottom eight teams like St Kilda and Hawthorn, and even being half time down to the Suns like they were. Probably the concern for me is what they're doing in their back half of the ground. They gave up 9 goals from turnover, just handing the ball back to Hawthorn on the weekend, and they're very much a kicking team from the back half or play the same side of the ground. So if they're on the right side of the ground, they'll pretty much stay there. They might poke the ball around a bit, but they don't. The AFL 18 for handball, so they're not going to run and carry and break you open through that part of the ground. So they probably need to take a few more risks for me in the back half of the ground to give their forwards some sharper opportunities. So what do you think happens in the last quarter when they're down by 53 points? I mean, at one point, Hawthorn were going to relive the Shade game back from 1995. G'day Jason Dunstall out there who took Hawthorn to the Shade. I was there that day. But in the quarter four, 47% mark play on rate Brisbane. And the previous three, it was 27. So they decided to just keep the ball moving and take some risks and mark and play on by hand. And then they get this enormous result. So I actually think they can walk away from this game whilst they'll be getting bashed by most people around. They go, look at your last quarter, look what we did. That's now what we have to replicate, because they looked dynamic. Hawthorn couldn't stop it. Their defence couldn't stop it. They got them over the back so many times and had an awesome quarter to a point that I think it's actually a positive for them. So they can reflect on and go, awesome, we've been a bit, you know, lethargic the last 3 weeks, but we found something within a game. And you've got to take your wins within a game. And I think they've found at least something they can continue on with.
Let's go back to the Shade game, shall we? What are your recollections of that?
I was on the sidelines that particular game as an emergency. So, watching it unfold. It was a hot day at the Gabba, and everyone that's ever been to the Gabba, the last quarter, the sun tends to belt into your eyes at one end of the ground. So, which means the other side, the actual, I guess the stadium protects you. There's a big area on the ground. The MCG has that a little bit on the interchange side as well. So Jason took, the bench was on the opposite side of the ground, so he took the whole bench to the Shade on the other side of the ground. And I noticed at the time, but I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. And of course, when Brisbane came back and won the game, that's what the biggest talk was at the time. And thank God the media back then wasn't like it was now, because that's all we'd be talking about right now, Jared, on a Tuesday morning.
Absolutely right. Fremantle and Richmond. So it was interesting. We spoke about this yesterday. Sundays, the two thrillers on Sunday, Essendon and Sydney, wide open, scoring, hugely accurate, no crowd.
Yeah.
over in Perth, a real hand-to-hand combat struggle, wildly inaccurate, take to the final minutes, pulsating because of the emotional investment of the home fans in it. I know you were taken by that game.
To me, it's a great little test. And this is, if you're sitting there at anywhere, AFL House, you're going, what? We always ask it every year, what do we want our game to look like? And I don't think anyone can agree. I think you've got two perfect examples right here. One, that's a high-scoring game without a crowd. Was it good? Yeah, it was good. It's entertaining. Awesome. And then you've got this pulsating game where it's inaccurate, but there's a crowd, there's an atmosphere. I don't know. Which one would you rather have?
So I'd rather have the MCG game in front of a full house.
You reckon that?
Yeah. Because I think the giddy highs and the momentum within that would have made it a superior experience to what was happening in Perth. But it's skewed that it's canned effects underneath it. So you don't get the full amazement on the Papley goal. You don't get the... So when Essendon come again late at the MCG, the cameras start to shake. The tremor in the stadium created by fans starts to shake the picture. That's how much you feel it. So that's all that was missing from that. So I know where you're coming from with the your turn, our turn, in a way. I didn't think it was that it just lacked for the true crowd. If you transpose the Perth crowd into the MCG game, that's what I'll take.
Yep. But I think both games are great.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. And that's when we always say what's the game should look like. I think we should have a game like the Fremantle-Richmond game. We should have a game like the Essendon-Sydney game. Yeah, there's certain games we don't want to see. We don't want to see the games where everyone's just booting around their back half and one kicks it, they get it, they have their turn just booting it around and it's kind of boring. It's kind of like watching two tennis players just hit the ball back and forth and no points getting scored. So I think that's sort of a game you want to eradicate, but I that's what I love about this game. It actually, every game should look a little bit different depending on the two oppositions and what they bring. So I think it's awesome. But I think overall, what we all agree is the game's nothing without a crowd.
Yep.
And the people that follow it, it kind of loses its atmosphere no matter how good the spectacle is.
Fremantle, so they've got custody of eighth, which hasn't meant much. This is the classic pass the parcel. Someone's going to get left with it at the end of round 23.
Oh, it's awesome. And it's great. It's Fremantle's turn to hold on to it for a little while. They did have it there for a second before Geelong really just said, no, we're the big boys and took it away from them, about a month ago now. But Fremantle have had a pretty good season. Like I think they play great game styling under Justin Longmuir. AFL 18th for accuracy, that's their big one. They're the only team in the competition that has more points than goals. So you think about that, they could be sitting fifth or sixth at the moment and really starting to challenge that part of the ladder. So they're a bit closer than what you think because on their game styling, they're getting the shots on goal, but they just have to fix up the last part of it. So, yeah, they're a chance to hold it, but you'll never know.
Andrew Brayshaw was enormous late. Well, actually, was enormous all day, but especially late when it was to be won.
I think it's a good sign when you miss your skipper and your most influential player of the last decade and the next kid kind of goes, I'm ready to take that over, and that's what it kind of looked like. So if you're a Freo fan, you're probably thinking, oh, it's okay when Nat goes. We'll be okay. You know, he wasn't there and we still had a gritty performance. We've still got Sarong and Brayshaw and maybe Chera for the future. So I think it's exciting times for them.
And Richmond... my kingdom for a clearance at the end.
Oh, yeah. At the end. I mean, that's the thing. One thing about defensive 50 stoppages, you saw Brayshaw, he was there, hit two players. So he didn't have an opponent. Often what happens in the defensive 50 is a mid. You know, a lot of teams will just, you play on your directive player and stop him from getting the ball, but you need someone to be able to win it. So Brayshaw was the one for Fremantle that did it. So it was really game for him just to go, because let's say ball spills and it goes to his direct opposition. Richmond will get a snapshot at goal. So it's an interesting game of ducks and drakes that last little bit, but he was just good enough in the moment, I think. And that's what an important sign of leadership.
On the Magnets with Justin Lepich on a Tuesday morning, I've just got this nagging idea. So as well as Franklin and Favola, did the Bulldogs under Peter Rode, right at the end of his coaching career, late in the season, spend their whole last portion of a game when they may or may not have been trying to win, trying to thwart Matthew Lloyd kicking his 100th goal? In a game at, it would have probably been Telstra Dome at that stage. Does anyone else remember that? I've got this vague, nagging memory. So late in Peter Rhodes' coaching career with the Dogs, a game against Essendon, Lloyd's trying to get his 100th. The Bulldogs put all of their energies into stopping Lloyd rather than necessarily winning the match, which was linked a little bit to draft picks along the way. 0433 98 11 16 to correspond a little bit on the Suns. A bit more on the, so you've plotted the uncontested marks throughout the season. And I noticed Damien Hardwick raised the idea of, are we getting too much? Are we starting to drown in this? Is it becoming a bit of keeping's off with Justin Lepich?
We've been working on some things as a club to try and get better consistency in performance. And that started around about the mid part of the season. And I think we've had some evidence that that has worked in a couple of games, and we've been proud of the way that went. But over the last six quarters, that hasn't been there. We haven't had an ability to stop teams mid-flight. And there's lots of different parts of that, and that's up for the coaches and the players mostly to assess that. So we still have to deal with that as a club, and you won't see us sweep any of that under the carpet. But I'd have to say this one felt different. We've always been a club that said, just go and embrace whatever the hiccup is and challenge is, and just go and get on with it. On this occasion, we would have had 13 or 14 hours of travel and logistics, lost player bags. We get to a hotel, have to quarantine in our rooms. Dinner gets sent up in a paper bag at 10 o'clock. It was probably cooked at about 6:30. And we were still having players COVID tested well after midnight without having slept or even had a walk. And yet 9 hours later, we're on a bus going to the game.
Mark Evans, the Gold Coast chief executive on Sports Day last night, just stepping through what the Suns went through in the lead up to the game against Melbourne. And we were chatting in the office, Lepper, about, so what are your discount? Mm. So this is a low performance for the Suns.
Yep.
And it comes after a better period, and it comes after they want to eradicate this.
Yeah.
But what are your discount by the circumstances?
It's a great insight, and that's awesome for Mark Evans to talk about that, because we need to understand the things the players are going through before the game. The big question is, what's your alibi? You know, do you need one, and are you going to hang on to it? This is a sort of year, I think, where you can't mention to the players what potentially they can be going through. Because I don't know about you, but I would have thought if Melbourne had every opportunity the day before having to fly to Brisbane, not know where they're going, and get straight back on the plane and fly back, that's not a great, you know, that's not a great prep for a game. Yep. Either. If I took the two, I'd probably take the plane flight back and forth, and the Suns' ability to, because there's lots of little things about not getting food on time and getting to bed late and all. Whereas Melbourne probably just come back home, went to their beds. So they probably at least had a slightly better prep in the lead in, but I think we're in the year in 2021, even 2020 last year. It's a no alibi time for footy clubs. You can't tell. And look, I think for the administrators of the game, yep, you've got to plan for it. You've got to go there and you've got to just say, geez, it's going to be hard on the boys and all that. And you've got to maybe temper your expectations at certain times, given what they've gone through. But you just can't tell your players. I think that's about the only thing, because they may use that then. Then they're like, oh, good, if I have a bad game, and it may be subliminally, if I have a bad game, it'll be about the fact that I didn't get to bed. And, you know, Mark Evans knows it's all good. You know, everyone's fine. So, because everyone's going through something that we don't know. And it's a great, and I said, it's a great insight. It's awesome for Mark Evans to talk about it, to give us an insight. But what you tell your players is probably the bit that you got to be careful of if you're a coach or an administrator in this weird old phase we're in.
So an alibi can easily become excuses at the ready.
And then you'll find out, well, you know, the opposition actually went through the same thing. And you're like, oh, yeah, but they weren't talking about it. It's not what you're going through. It's often what you talk about is what becomes your problem and how big you want to make it. So again, that is a horrible preparation. So I think we all agree with that. Keep that on the table. But the other part is, at what level do we just have to suck it up and move on?
So the question that sits over the Suns at this stage is, should they be more resilient than they are?
This goes
to profile, doesn't it? You started the season saying, this is not it. For the Suns, when other people were going, it has to be now. Your mantra from round one was, no, this is not the year.
Well, age demographic is really big as far as analytics in the game, and they've always been really low in you know, age demographic, and then they had high injury to key players at the start of the year. So then that's the other part to it. So what you produce on a game day, so 7 out of the top 8 teams every year make the finals that are top 8 in age. One normally misses out, and maybe one of the younger teams pops on in. But so if you recruited just on age demographic, you're probably going to play finals most year. If you just get a heap of old blokes together, just their smarts, experience, it probably makes a bit of common sense too. Even if they haven't played together a lot, they'll probably just to scratch out a season enough that can get you to the finals. But will it get you to the ultimate? It takes a bit more to it, and there's a bit more science behind that. But they've never been a team that's been able to get that age demographic right. Because you think about it, you develop a team at a young age to develop together to be old. So they've lost all those guys. If you put Lynch, Prestia and those guys, it'll be in that age demographic. They're probably in that finals look now. but then they can't recruit players there as in like as easy it is for a lot of other clubs. It's a difficult recruiting ground for them. So I feel for them. It's they. That's why I keep saying they need this breed to stay together, Lekosius and King and Rankin. They've just got to stay together so they can pull that each year by year, get that age demographic up, playing together every year, and then maybe in a year or two it might start to look like a consistent team.
The uncontested mark portfolio has been one of yours the whole way through, and you've documented at various stages how some teams use it to affect and how some teams use it and it almost undermines what they would like to do. So Damien Hardwick's introduced into the conversation the idea of if we get a real spike in uncontested marks, does it become keepings off? That's the broad. Is you want to just bring it back to the tangibles again?
Yeah, and it's and look, this is a difficult conversation because we don't like watching games with high uncontested marks. But you know what? If teams want to do it, we'll defend them a little bit better. You know, so there's that element to it too. So teams that have high uncontested marks, like say West Coast for example, Adam Simpson would say, well, don't blame me for having high uncontested marks. You defend. You come up the ground and defend us a bit higher up the ground. And then you give us more space behind the ball. So there's things that they can do to stop that. But I think it's all about balance. So if you look at one end of the spectrum, Adelaide Crows are not an uncontested mark team. They're the lowest in the competition, 68. I feel at times they need to just get tempo back in the game. And you know, but do they have the players that can actually control the ball? Because the worst thing you want to do as well, just like the Brisbane did on the weekend, is just hand the ball back for scores. Then you got West Coast at the other end, who are the highest uncontested mark team, where at times you're like going, you could go forward a little bit more now. So there's two ends. I think a Geelong do it really well, where they'll have games where they'll have really, really high uncontested marks and other games where they don't. They kind of mix and match depending on opposition and weather. But again, they've got a highly experienced team that can read the game. So they need a bit less coaching. They probably can read, oh yeah, I've been here before. You know, the opposition are folding numbers back. I can use more uncontested marks. Oh, the opposition are coming up a little higher. There's space over the back. I'm going to attack that space over the back. So they can make those decisions and judge it on the field. So that's another problem with coaching younger teams. You have to do most of the decision-making for them from the coach's box, which is really difficult to do.
Did you have a couple of other teams in the uncontested mark there?
No, they're the main ones. Yep. They're the main ones. It's just looking at the ends of the spectrum and how you can be too low and not get effect, and you can be too high and not get effect. So what the right balance is making sure, depending on, you might use it for some games, you might use it for others. That's the perfect world, I think, as far when that goes. But I'm with Damien because it's the one the spectator doesn't like. I think we're here for the fans and we're here for the spectators. And they're the worst games when two teams. When the two teams are both doing the same thing there, I reckon they're the worst games.
Yeah, Collingwood and Geelong. I'll never forget that game. It's seared into my mind. Memories of the night Clarko thwarted Buddy. Excellent. There'd be 50 messages of those who were there, Leffa. Buddy was on 98. Fev was on 92. Fev kicked 6 second-half goals to get to 99 with 5 minutes to go. Clarkson opted to flood the back line. Fev had a couple of chances at it in the dying stages but gave away a free kick. Jared, I was at the game. We had just gotten off the high from Buddy's 100th, sitting at level 3, only to run back downstairs midway through the fourth quarter with Fev needing only one more goal. But Clarko put his cluster down back and we went home devastated, shattered. I love the Ian Prendergast Twitter feed and the podcast that goes with that. A conversation on Waitley has just reminded me of the night Clarko flooded the Hawks back 50 in a 70-plus point win to stop Fev kicking his 100th. Should that still bother me as much as it does? Andrew and Altona, I was at that game and walked away frustrated with Fev, not Clarko and the Hawks. Fev made second, third, and fourth efforts, making me wonder where that had been over his whole career. Very nice. And Sammy in Norlane, the Clarko tactic to flood the back line and stop Fev from kicking 100 was the exact ruthless nature that won Hawthorn the flag against all odds and began a slow-building dynasty. Clarko is a genius. Good on you, Sammy. Thanks for pinging that through. Magnets.
Yep.
Okay, Charlie Cameron is a really important magnet right now.
Yeah. Well, I just thought we touched on Brisbane a little bit at the start, but another thing I think where they can get a lift is just showing something a little different to the opposition. Centre square bounce is something you can do that. He had 3 involvements in the last quarter when Brisbane were up and about and had some clearances. So I just like the look of that, whether that's something that Chris Fagan can go into a little bit more and add a bit of that spice every now and again, or even a Daniel Rich, someone that can, if you need to win the game, just something a little different, you know, to show the opposition. So that's, I reckon they had his agility, his speed. I just think it was a good look for them late in the last quarter. So there's one you can, I think, pop in there every now and again. And it's something they did that I just thought looked pretty good.
We called the Bulldogs game on the weekend, Josh Shackey. So yes. Really interesting. Excellent intercept marking, beaten a couple of crucial times, Tex Walker one-on-one, and trying to forecast that to what it looks like in a big final. What are you doing with the Shackey magnet?
Well, he's staying there, and I'm giving him some extra training, and definitely with as far as starting point training goes, and just the hand-to-hand combat component of it. So it's almost a little bit of grappling style where you can actually, it's almost like what the NFL player would do, a lineman, where they just do a lot of that pushing and shoving and probing and getting best position and getting your opposition out of the way without giving away a free kick. It's one of the great skills a key position player can have. So just keep training him up in that space, because the few he was beaten on, it wasn't handsy enough, you know, early. He just, without grabbing, of course, but he just wasn't handsy enough to own best position. So keep training him up, because you got Alex Keith out till probably week one of finals. So you got no choice in a lot of ways, but there's enough there to work with, because he had enough positives.
And you've been plotting Jordan Degoe, this interesting phase under Robert Harvey. What do you ultimately want him to be?
It's what you want him to be. I mean, he's killing it at the moment, and I don't think anyone's in disagreement with that. But his role's gone. We've talked about the match winner component of him. He's definitely the accumulator and distributor now in that team, and just purely on numbers. So we spoke, I think it was about 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, about this. He had 34 possessions again on the weekend. 5 of those were contested. 29 of those were uncontested again. So he's an uncontested type player. So and most of those disposals, 27 of them in the back half of the ground, so only a handful in the front half. But 16 of those, Drew, were handball receives.
How interesting.
So a little flick handball, you run, you distribute. Flick handball, you run, you distribute from the back half of the ground. So that's his, and he's doing that really well, but it's a different style of player, the way they're using him. Because they're winning now, and there's a game where they lost doing it. So how do you measure, is it good or bad? I don't know. It's more about how they're deploying him now to how they were deploying him differently in that more Stringer Martin match winner role in the front half of the year, which can have its ups and downs. You can have games playing that role when you're not the match winner. You're literally in starvation corner. So I think Jordan Degoe will be loving this role, because it gets him up around the field. He gets the ball in his hands. But it's interesting the way they use it. And it worked again on the weekend, so that's good. Will it work next time? Who knows? But his role's probably somewhere in the middle, isn't it? Well, you do that and you go, actually, now we need the match winner. Yeah, let's move Jordan now into that more centre square bounce forward role. Something like that. They may have an alternate or a two-prong with him in the future.
So back half handball receive distribute, that's a little bit of what Richmond was prior to 2017 with Cochin and Martin, where too much of it was
in
vein,
back half, yes,
and not enough was impactful and truly damaging.
Still, Sidebottom's numbers, handball receives, weren't much different. I think he was 13. So he also got a lot of those sort of balls as well. So it's a little bit in how the Collingwood mids play, not just Jordan Degoe. It's just whether, you know, is it just Steele and somebody else? Or maybe they think, you know, we need an experienced player with their ball in our hand in the back half at the moment. We don't have enough depth and mids. So there's reasons for it. So I'm just interested to see whether they continue to use that, or the new coach, whoever that is, continues to use him in that role next year.
Lepper, good session on the magnets.
Nice.
Well done.
Thanks, Jared.
Good on you. Justin Lepich on a Tuesday morning keeps us up to speed how this AFL season is unfolding.